Welcome to this next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. With me today, I have Mark Mullen, the new CEO of First Direct. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you. Hello.
First of all, Mark, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you've come from, your background, etc.?
Yeah, of course. Listen, I'm a 43-year-old Irishman, and I'm currently living in Yorkshire. I'm married with three kids. I spent my career, having graduated, you know, from university in Dublin as an historian, in the financial services sector. So I've worked in business to business, I've worked in specialist leasing and consumer finance, and then I've worked in mainstream banking. I've worked in the Middle East and I've worked in the UK. And I've spent, probably the largest part of my career in marketing. This is the first sort of, if you like, business leadership or CEO-ship role that I've had. And I've literally just started it, so about 6 weeks ago.
So a little bit full up on that right now.
Yeah, pretty much full on and you know, up to my eyeballs in stuff.
Excellent. Well, tell us a little bit about First Direct. I mean, I know it's been around for 22 years, but what do you think that it is that makes you different about what you do?
I think it's the most basic and fundamental question about First Direct. This is the second time that I've worked at First Direct. The first time I was here, I spent 2.5 years as a marketing director. The truth of First Direct is that the customer actually is the be-all and end-all of this business. The customer is the most important person in the room, on the phone, in the mail, on the email. It is a truly customer-centric, customer-obsessed business.
And I mean, I spoke to one of my colleagues, and they asked me a question if I could add it to the list. And they were saying to me that, you know, you guys have been around for, say, 22 years now, and you consistently are top of league tables, win awards, etc., etc., when it comes to service, being customer centric, etc. But what do you think it is that the First Direct do to re-energize and recreate and perpetuate your customer focus?
It's part of the DNA. I think it's a great question, because in the time period that you're referring to, which is 22 years, there's been a heck of a lot of different people sitting in my chair.
Uh-huh.
And so it's easy to kind of say, well, gee, you know, the baton passing must be pretty good in order to keep that focus and keep that belief.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it's the fundamental business culture that's so strong. So, you know, the baton passing is pretty good, and we are very, very careful about the people we recruit and the attitude that they come to our business with, because you can't really shape or change that beyond a certain age.
Sure.
But the culture itself is what differentiates First Direct. It's got a tremendously strong culture. You've got an alarm going off, I think, but never mind.
Sorry.
It's a tremendously strong culture. Much, much stronger than any individual within it. And consequently, there are things that are acceptable at First Direct, and then there are things that are not, and they're never going to be. And that protects it, and that protects the customer.
Right. So you mentioned culture and also then hiring people. Can you explain to me a bit more about sort of First Direct's culture is? I mean, is it a succinct thing? Is it a set of values? What is that? What best describes it?
I'll tell you what it is. The distillation, the essence of First Direct, we describe as expect respect. Respect sits right at the heart of our brand. Respect for each other, respect for our customers, respect for our investors. It informs all of our attitudes. So I can give you a whole bunch of words if you like, but frankly, respect is probably the one most important word that works here and applies here.
Okay.
I
mean, using that as your sort of, if you like, your the benchmark of what you do, I mean, how does that manifest itself in terms of the people that you hire? I mean, how do you sort of test that, as it were, or can you not test that?
No, we do. We've got a very exhaustive hiring and a very exacting hiring process, and we've managed to preserve those standards in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a very intensive and, frankly, long, you know, it's almost a 2-month acclimatization process for anyone who comes into this business. So it's not just a question of you know, bringing people in, putting them on the phones, or putting them into a process. We used to say, and I think it's true, that we hire for character.
Right.
We look for character in people. We look for people who have personality.
Uh-huh.
Because you can't train that. You look for people who are confident in themselves, who are relaxed with other people, who are willing to ask questions, who have a sense of humor.
Uh-huh.
And they have to overplay those things. So, you know, everyone's got those characteristics at some level, but we're looking for people for whom those characteristics are just more evident or more prevalent. We're not afraid of the person and the character. It's not just about the intellect and the ability.
Okay. A lot of the stuff that I talk about on the blog is I talk about how to create sort of customer focus in our businesses. But what I'm also seeing is that, and I think this is where yourselves are, you're leading the way and you're also very, very well positioned for this, is that there's the power of the customer is mm-hmm. is rising and the voice of the customer is rising. I mean, why is it, do you think that is? Is it just about the social technology that we're being surrounded by now, or is it more than that?
I think that technology, and specifically the internet, has played a profound role in the power of the consumer in pretty much every industry category. The fact that it's taken, you know, probably 12 years of evolution to get us to the point where the customer's, you know, level of control and level of transparency is such that today, you know, a tolerance level that might not even have existed in 1998, you know, it's in your face today.
Yes.
Once upon a time, the pub conversation was nothing more than the pub conversation between a few mates criticizing things or, you know, applauding things. Now it's a blog.
Yes.
Now it's you know, it's a viral campaign. Now it's you know, it's a Facebook network. So the amplification impact of the individual's opinion is so different that it's natural that they have much more power.
So
but also the tolerance level for organizations being anything less than pretty black and white and pretty straightforward is low.
So, yeah, that leads me on to the next question I was going to ask was, so do you think that actually as customers we are demanding more now, or is it that service levels are not as high as they have been, or is it a mixture of both?
I'm not sure that customers are demanding more. I think there is a degree to which basic standards have risen across a whole bunch of industries. And in some industries, you can see it more visibly than in others. You know, in airline industries, the basic standards have risen and the basic expectation and accessibility has risen. What I look at and what interests me a great deal about First Direct in the banking category is that for as long as I've been here, and frankly for, you know, 10, 15, almost all 20 years of our existence, we've pretty much had the same performance gap in some of our key metrics over the competition.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so even if the standards have risen, the advantages that we have in terms of our reputation has been pretty stable.
Right.
And I'm not sure that's a great thing in the sense that I think it tells you that the banking industry has not evolved perhaps as quickly or in favor of the customer as perhaps we might have wanted it. And remember, I'm a consumer too, so
sure.
I consume what I sell.
Mm-hmm.
But we can only compete with the competition. We don't create the competition.
And so what is it do you think that you guys do? And I'm sure it's probably going to be quite simple kind of answer to this, given what you said before, is what is it that you think that you do that makes you fundamentally different against some of your peers and therefore makes you highly recognized and highly talked about?
It's a matter of, you know, do you believe what I'm about to say next?
Right.
You're only going to get it if you bank with us.
Yeah.
But as the CEO, I do quite a lot of call listening. You know, I'm listening to learn about our customers' needs, but I'm also listening so that I get a sense of where the quality standards are
mm-hmm.
and where the conversations are. You know, I need to do that in my role. What makes me feel very proud and frankly surprises most people is the extent to which the conversations that we have with customers favor customers.
Right.
And we're looking for ways that will save customers money.
Uh-huh.
And we're looking at their money with a view to saying you could do better than you're doing. And I wonder how many organizations take that view.
See, that's
that actually, you know, we're here to make you better off.
See, that's quite interesting because that flies in the face to some extent of the public company quarterly reporting culture. because
maybe so.
Because I mean, and I applaud you for it, because I think what it's doing is taking a longer view. It has a longer horizon. It's more about the well-being of the customers and retention and loyalty. I mean, I'm assuming that, but I assume that that's the underlying sort of premise of what you're talking about.
Listen, at the end of any business, and I keep saying it to people who work in and around First Direct, there is a single wallet.
Yeah.
I'll describe it, a single customer. Anything and everything that happens in the four walls of First Direct, or any business for that matter, only happens because the customer is willing to pay you.
Yes.
And you are entirely at the mercy of your customers, and it is by their grace that you get to do what you do. And
yes.
If you kind of keep that in the front of your mind, then it becomes obvious that the industry that we're in is a relationship industry.
Yes.
And that the prosperity of the customers we're serving is directly linked to our own prosperity.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not our job to try and diminish that. In fact, it's in everyone's interest for that to be improved.
I guess in a way is that come back to the very basic sort of level of, if you're serving somebody, then to serve somebody should be seen as a privilege in a way, because as you say, it's their money and they have the choice, and it's, nobody has a monopoly position, and therefore for somebody to be or want to become your customer, then that becomes almost an honor or a privilege in a way, and it's not to diminish that and disrespect that in any way at all.
Oh, it's absolutely that, and it's certainly to respect the fact that the customer is ultimately the one who chooses where their money goes.
Yeah.
And you make a really interesting point about the sort of, if you like, principles of service. It's not about being servile.
No.
But it's about taking a great deal of pride in serving. And that means that you don't see what we do as, you know, a stop-off on our glittering careers. We're here to serve customers. That's the point.
Yes.
That's not the, you know, that's not a temporary situation. That is the philosophy of the place.
Yes.
And you know, I can claim it as much as anyone who listens to this blog will, you know, want to hear it or believe it. You've got to try it for yourself in order to see whether what I'm saying is true.
Oh, indeed. And so, I mean, taking your, well, trying to leverage your experience a little bit, but taking your CEO hat off and thinking a bit about being sort of more being a customer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what do you think that businesses, whether they're large or small, should be doing to get better, provide better service, etc., in order to compete better?
They should be doing two things, probably the one thing more than the other. They should be listening and they should be watching. And I'm a great believer in watching people. In you know, go out and have a conversation, listen to customers,
mm-hmm.
By all means. But my advice to anyone looking to really find out what makes people think tick is to look at them and watch people and see how they behave when they don't know they're being viewed.
Right.
Because you can ask a person a question and they're going to potentially answer it hugely honestly, but you can't help but rationalize the decisions that you make.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us are the same in that regard.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to really get the truth of how people behave and why they behave in a particular way, you know, sometimes you ask them, but then you cross-validate that with what you see. And people watching, especially as a marketer, which is, you know, where I spent a lot of my career,
mm-hmm.
Is a tremendous way of building customer insight in terms of how people actually use products and how people actually consume services, as opposed to how you've designed them or how you think they do. So I would advise, do all the watching you can.
That's quite interesting, because when people talk about implementing customer feedback and voice of the customer programs, there's a lot of listening that gets banded around, but not a lot of watching.
Yeah, well, it's a particular challenge when it comes to a direct bank. We're a direct bank.
I was wondering how you were going to do that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, the thing that you've got to remember is that although we're a direct bank, it's pretty ordinary people, normal people who bank with us.
Yes.
It's not like you've got direct customers and they're different people, human beings, than non-direct customers. That's just nonsense.
Yes.
So you're going to learn a huge amount about your customers by watching how they behave in the supermarket or the restaurant.
Okay.
Or, you know, standing on a football pitch on a Sunday morning, you know, watching the kids play football and what chats happen and what... It's all about watching and listening and absorbing from the world around you. So the fact that we're a direct bank is not terribly problem. The other thing is that online, which is a major part of our business, you know, consumer behavior online is much more visible
yes.
than most consumers would believe.
Yes.
And clickstream analysis and the number of insight tools available to the, if you like, the marketers in the world can give you tremendous insights into exactly, you know, what journeys people take and why they take them.
Yes. And I think it's what's interesting as well, what you're saying is that, is when you talk about listening and watching is to listen and watch in a from a broader perspective than your own sector or your own industry, because they're not discrete and nothing's mutually exclusive, and there'll be things that will affect other things, and therefore getting a better understanding of the broader consumer or the broader customer can be really insightful for your business as a whole.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's absolutely true. I think it's tremendously important that you try and, you know, do that and make space to do it.
Okay. So, Mark, if you were to go about, I mean, going back to the question about sort of recreating the First Direct culture, I mean, because that's a really interesting, I think a really fundamental sort of point around creating something which is an organization which is very customer-centric. If you were to go about recreating a comparable culture, if you became, say, a CEO of another business,
mm-hmm.
what would be the first things that you would do?
Oh, that's a tremendously difficult question. there's a certain uniqueness. First Direct, I have heard described as an ecosystem.
Yes.
It's very tempting to think that you can take parts of that ecosystem and apply them to other businesses. It's very difficult to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, it's an ecosystem that's only 22 years old, so in relative terms, it's quite young.
Yes.
And it was built this way from scratch.
Uh-huh.
It's not, so the culture and the philosophy of First Direct is not something we applied to it over the last 5 or 6 years. It was engineered into the business. It is part of the DNA of the business from scratch. My own view is how you make fundamental changes in shift in direction and philosophy and culture of organizations
mm-hmm.
has an awful lot to do with who you're hiring.
Right.
And the cycle of renewal is a key thing to look at here, which is who are you bringing in that are, you know, that are the next generation of, if you like, culture breakers, or, you know, the people who are going to make this the organization that you want it to be, but perhaps it isn't today. I'm very interested in who's coming through the door.
Right.
So I'm not. I don't know. I don't think I've answered your question, but I don't think I can.
No. I thought I don't think that. I think you're right, and I agree with that. I don't think there is an answer to the question, but I just thought it's worth asking anyway. So, thank you for, you know, all of that. I mean, I'm just thinking about the future of business. I mean, what do you think is the outlook face? What do you think are going to be the big issues in the coming few years?
Oh, listen, I think we're still at a relatively early stage in understanding how profound an impact the internet is having and is going to have on our lives.
Mm-hmm.
I really do believe that. I think the informated age
mm-hmm.
and how information is going to be used and is already being used to drive life improvements is all around us. You know, once upon a time, you know, you had to know where you were going and the route you were going to take if you set off in your car to go to a place you've never been before. Increasingly, you just type a postcode into a GPS device and, you know, follow the disembodied voice instructions until you get there.
Yes.
And it's a simple example of information technology, information, you know, making your life better, making
yes.
your life less stressful, making your life easier. It's impossible to anticipate all of the examples of how information will be able to do that. But I think that that's a journey that we're at the beginning of, not at the end of.
Yes.
So this whole idea of how do you make information about money, for example, which is, you know, our business.
Yes, indeed.
And about a consumer's money more immediate, more directly relevant, richer, if you like, to the person who needs it. You know, how do I make sure that my customers know what's going on with their money, but also what options are available to them around investments and opportunities for them to, you know, make the most of their money? And this richness of information, together with the immediacy and convenience or of deployment, because, you know, more and more miniaturization, portability of device
mm-hmm.
is going to continue to transform consumers' lives.
Yes.
In ways that I just, you know, it's quite exciting to think of all of the ways that this can evolve and will evolve over the next, goodness knows, 10, 15 years.
Yes.
It's a journey. It sounds a glib thing to say.
Yes.
But it's a journey, and I don't believe that the somewhat glacial pace of change in the financial services sector is a sustainable behavior over the next 20 years.
And is the things that you're mentioning there, is that part of what the First Direct Lab is trying to sort of tap into as well, is that it's not just about yourselves, but it's also about the wisdom of the crowds, as it were?
Yeah, I think that the it's the ingenuity and the genius.
Yeah.
That why on earth would we believe that we know best about everything?
Mm-hmm.
We do know, you know, we're pretty good people that we're employing here to think long and hard about how to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there's 2,500 of us.
Yes.
There's 25 million. so it's a numbers game. So
sure.
Why wouldn't you leverage the intelligence and the wit and the wisdom of your customers, of your critics, and of your admirers?
Sure.
So the lab is an attempt to sort of begin that journey. And we may, and we probably will, react and implement things differently as a consequence. And there'll be other things where we choose to do what we want to do anyway. But asking the question and putting stuff out there and co-creating or crowdsourcing is hardly a new idea. It just looks a little bit different when you start to apply it to your bank.
Yes, indeed. I think you're right. I think it's for the first time in a number of sort of years is that I believe that we know little about what's coming, but actually the sense of balance that off, counterbalance that with the sense of excitement of what could happen, I think it means that as you rightly say, I think we're at the cusp of...
If you stand back from things, and I mean a long way back, then there are certain macro trends that I would observe.
Yeah.
Generally, this is a big statement, but I think things are getting smaller. If you think about the global trend towards miniaturization,
mm-hmm.
Then you can see it manifest itself in all sorts of bizarre and different ways. So even though the size of your TV screen's got bigger, the width or depth of your TV screen has gotten shallower.
Yes.
The weight of your TV has gotten lighter.
Mm-hmm.
The portable music player has gotten to the point where, frankly, it's tiny. Yeah. And the telephone can get smaller and smaller and smaller. And that therefore creates a whole sense of personalization and portability.
Yes.
You know, at the moment we think about it in terms of mobile device, iPad, iPod, but I think it's got more generations of change to go through.
Yes.
And there's an intimacy that allows that is not possible, or certainly wasn't possible 20 or 30 years ago. I think a whole range of technologies have gotten much more accessible and much cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
So it is possible to spot trends, but it's probably not possible to spot the exact example of where the next manifestation of small, you know, pops up.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you said small, and then you said intimacy, and one of the things I would add on to that would be simplicity.
True.
And I think it's those combination of things and what we can do with those three things that will define the next level, or possibly, or something else completely different will arrive, and we'll all be shocked.
Listen, you've got to be, it's a great point, and we try not to lose sight of the fact that we're very interested in banking.
Mm-hmm.
It's our job to be interested in banking. Our customers are not interested in banking.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're interested in money. There's a big difference between the two.
Yes.
And so it's important as a business to understand where the limits of your customers' interest are. Yeah, because otherwise you can get lost in your own lunchtime.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, and we're a bank, and that's what you want us to be. You want us to be a good bank, you want us to be a decent bank. But let's not deceive ourselves that you want to be, you know, tremendously engaged and interested in banking. It's mm-hmm. a bit like saying you want to be tremendously engaged and interested in electricity. Mm-hmm. I don't think you do. You want it to work. You want it to be efficient. You want it to be effective. You want it to be reliable. You want it to be empathetic. Yeah, you want it to be easy and simple, to your point.
Yeah.
But you don't really necessarily, you don't need to know how it works.
No.
I'm quite proud of the fact that I don't know how my car works. I'm just quite happy that it does.
Yes, indeed. Mark, in the interest of time, I've just said this would be about 20 minutes, sure. But we've now gone up to about 27, so I thought I'd just wrap it up. But that's been fantastic. Thank you for that.
Not at all.
Well, I have one final question that I always ask everybody that I interview on the blog, and that is there something that you would like to shamelessly plug?
Oh, listen, I have no hesitation in saying I'll plug First Direct. I happen to believe in it. I love it. I love working here. I'm very proud of working here. And too few people bank with us. You know, it's the best bank in the UK.
There you go. There's a brilliant shameless plug. Well, thank you for that. And that brings us to the end of our podcast. Thank you again, Mark, and best of luck on your tenure as CEO.
Thank you.
And, well, we look forward to tracking your progress and successes in the future.
Take care. Thanks.